Okay, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. Welcome to Radio Top Tropicals, our next episode of everything you need to know about tropical gardening. You can listen to us live on our Mixlr site. That's mixlr.com/toptropicals. Or you can also listen to archive episodes right from our website. And if you have any questions, you can either send them through our Mixlr site or you can call our studio, 239-887-3323. That's 239-887-3323. And we'll make sure to get your questions live on the air. Now, to introduce today's topic is our host, International Certified Crop Advisor and Weed Specialist, Mr. Robert Reifer. Robert, to you.
Thank you. Today's topic is Clitoria amorphophallus and other things that go bump in the night. Basically, the science of nomenclature and taxonomy describes and attempts to label and categorize all the plants and animals in the world. They're still not doing a very good job at it because the tomato, for example, is having its name changed basically once a year or so, which causes fits in trying to write papers on vegetables. But taxonomists, being human beings, are subject to all the frailties of the human race, and one's mind tends to wander. So let's discuss one of the amazing plants that we have here at Top Tropicals. It is the genus Clitoria, and when you see the flower on our website, you will understand why. It is also known as the blue pea vine. It is absolutely gorgeous, and the colors are just incredibly wonderful. Next, we also have amorphophallus, which in Latin means deformed penis. This is one of the, probably the largest flowering plant in the world. A specimen, Amorphophallus titanum, grew to a height of 33 feet in the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens back in the 1930s. There are a few other interesting names, such as Corybus fornicatus, and once again, if you Google Corybus, C-O-R-B-Y-A-S, and I'm assuming everybody out there knows how to spell fornicatus. You will see what the flower looks like. Now, these odd plant names are made by genera, which is sort of a grouping of several species, then by the species. So these plants have two names. Sometimes there's a special variety of a species, in which case you would have a variety alba if it's white, variety roseum if it's exceptionally purple. This system of naming plants was started by Carl Linnaeus back in 1845 because common names can be most confusing. For example, there are over 50 plants that carry the name orange jasmine, many of them not even belonging to the jasmine family. The night blooming jasmine, which we carry here at Top Tropicals, is not even a relative of the jasmine family. In fact, it's a member of the nightshade family, the Solanaceae, which the tomatoes and peppers belong to. So when you see these odd names, and if you want to get a plant, all you do is Google in that odd, weird Latin or Greek name. Now, some names of plants, especially plant families, are named after people. For example, Amherstia nobilis is named after Lady Amherst, who was wife of one of the governors of India. The orchid Stanhopia, named after the Earl of Stanhope. The carrot family also is named Umbelliferae, after the Umbels. Who were the Umbels? They were the people supplying the money to the taxonomists that named it Umbelliferae. So sometimes you do get what you pay for.
Robert, what an interesting topic. Taxonomy. Nothing to do with your income taxes. So there's a whole, area of naming plants and species. How do they get approved? How do they decide that this is going to be the one that they actually use? And who is the board, if you will, that approves those names?
Okay, for orchids at least, Kew Gardens, and I also believe the other regular common plants in England takes on the bulk of this responsibility. Even they get a miss once in a while. For example, recently they have lumped about half a dozen or so genera into one genera. And among taxonomists, there are lumpers, which attempt to lump everything into a genus or a single species. And there are splitters, who basically look at a genus and say, that's not right, this is actually five genera. Same going for the species. So the science of taxonomy and nomenclature are basically a war between your lumpers and your splitters.
I think I saw that on TV, the lumpers versus the splitters. It sounds like the taxonomy profession is as confusing as the tax code. So, Robert, only in Top Tropicals do you get to hear the interesting topics of how they name plants and species. But let's move to some of our questions that are already coming in from our listeners. You mentioned jasmine in your introduction. We have a question here regarding, I want to make a night flowering garden. Can you recommend some plants that flower at night?
I most certainly can. There are Brunfelsias, which we carry here at Top Tropicals. Also, there is night blooming jasmine, which not only blooms at night, but produces an aroma that wafts through the nighttime air. In addition, we do carry epiphytic, meaning tree growing, but you can raise it in a pot. Cacti, one of them, Selenocereus grandiflorus, blooms at night, only for one night, each flower, but the flower is an amazing 12 inches across. So here at Top Tropicals, we have a variety of night-blooming plants that smell sweet and wonderful.
Robert, I'm on the website right now looking at some of the jasmine, and here's a related question regarding that. Is the night-blooming jasmine poisonous, and is it safe for pets and animals?
Well, it is a member of the nightshade family, and approximately 10% of the population of humans are deathly allergic to the aroma. So one must be careful. We're constantly asked about the edibility of some specific plant. Well, all plants are edible, sometimes only once. So one needs to be concerned with food allergies as opposed to whether the plant is poisonous or not. Many plants have gotten a bad rap for being poisonous. For instance, they tried to assassinate George Washington with a plate of tomatoes. It was known as the love apple, and since it was a member of the nightshade family, they thought that a delicious plate of tomatoes would kill him.
Tomato killer. You know, you mentioned some of the difficult names of the genuses and the species, and I just wanted to remind our listeners that at our Top Tropicals website, we have all of our plants also listed by category. Rare plants, aquatic plants, mangoes, fruits, and we have a section just for fragrant plants. So to make it easier for you to find the right plant for you, you can go to our website, look for the category that you're interested in, and all of the related plants and trees in those categories will show up. Okay, so speaking of fruiting, flowering trees, we have a question regarding a mango. We're past some of the cold weather, I hope, across the country, but nonetheless, what is the most cold hardy mango? What do you recommend, Robert?
Unfortunately, all of your mango trees within 1 to 2 degrees Fahrenheit are more or less the same when it comes to cold sensitivity. We can tell you, however, that the Julie variety is the most cold sensitive. And while it may not die here in South Florida, the production of fruit is absolutely abysmal. So unless you live in Jamaica or in a very warm area such as the Florida Keys, we tend to recommend that you stay away from this particular variety. So one thing you can do is get one of the dwarf mangoes and then see about protecting it. Here, even in Southwest Florida, we look for what we call a microclimate, where we will plant a cold-sensitive tree or bush on the south side of the house so that when we get the cold fronts in, it's not as damaged.
Good advice. Now, back to the night flowering plants. We have another question. I know you mentioned the jasmine. One of our listeners is asking, I want to make a night flowering garden. Can you recommend additional plants that might flower at night?
Okay, as we have said, the night blooming jasmines, Brunfelsia, and then the night blooming cacti. Also, one thing I would recommend is go for a walk sometime in the evening. Smell around, see what you find, and you might see some wonderful flowering plants that are there as well. We do have and carry many of the flowering and scented plants, and I would recommend you visit our website and take a look at those plants that we have known for their aroma.
Excellent. And here's another question that came on. I think we talked about this plant a little bit, the blue butterfly pea. Besides the interesting name, is it edible?
I've seen ladies mix the blue butterfly pea in drinks, drink it, and then I actually saw them again the following week. So I am assuming that this particular flower is edible. But once again, with the greatest of caution, I urge that you always test something out. For those of you ladies, test it out on the husband first, and if he's around the next week, then I would give it a try.
Very nice. Okay, before we move on, as is our custom here, every week we talk about a special that we have going on at our online store. And this week, it's in all the news. I'm sure everybody's heard about all the hubbub of the atmosphere and the climate agreements. And our message to our listeners is, forget the politics, start your own climate agreement in your backyard. I think we can all agree that the best way to reduce CO2 in the atmosphere is to plant a tree. And we want to help you do that. And so we have a special this week, 15% off, a minimum order of $50 before shipping and handling. This offer is valid through Sunday night, June 4th. And to take advantage of that 15% off code, just use the code REDUCECO2. That's REDUCECO2. And you can save 15% all of your orders of $50 and more before shipping and handling. All right, Robert, with that out of the way, we have another question here, I guess, regarding one of our past episodes. We had a webcast about aphrodisiacs a number of episodes ago. And the question is, do all fragrant plants with essential oils work as aphrodisiacs? So there's an interesting question.
More testing is actually needed in this subject, and for anybody who cares to gather a group, you need at least 30 for a Z statistical test. So we will require at least 30 young ladies and probably several plants with which to test out these aphrodisiacs. It all depends, once again, on the individual. What turns on one person may not turn on another person. And as I've said, your particular biochemistry will determine whether or not an aphrodisiac works on you.
Always the scientist, Robert. You're willing to do that 30 female testing just for science, all in the name of science. You are quite an effort. Okay, here's another question here regarding a pineapple fruit. The question is, will a pineapple fruit more than once, the pineapple?
Now, each individual pineapple plant only fruits once. It has sex and it dies. However, the top of the pineapple may then be cut off and replanted. Some of the experts can even divide this pineapple top and get up to 16 plants out of it. In addition, from the base of the mature pineapple plant, which is fruited, you will get sports coming out. So even though you won't get it on that one particular plant, the pineapple being a member of the family Anonaceae, it's like a bromeliad. So you're basically going to have to get your new pineapples off of the plants which sprout from around the base and on top of the fruit itself.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And one of our listeners is making an interesting comment regarding a picture they saw on the website, on the Top Tropicals website, the picture of the Butea monosperma. Robert, what can you tell us about this plant?
Down here in Fort Myers in the Edison Botanical Gardens, this was one of his favorite trees. And basically, the Butea monosperma has an absolutely gorgeous orange-red blossom. And once again, this being radio, I can't show you a picture of it, but if you come to our Top Tropicals website, you'll be able to see it. Now, I was in the nursery a little while back, and we saw the Butea monosperma that we have for sale, and they are absolutely gorgeous. Excuse me. They also have what is known as a caudex, or swollen base. So many of your bonsai and caducifer people will love this plant. They are huge, they're absolutely excellent, and I recommend it highly for the bonsai or tropical flower tree enthusiast.
Well, Robert, you're right, it's radio, not television. I recommend our listeners go to the website. To me, it looks like the cover of a Rolling Stones album. I do remember
that.
It sure does. All right, next question we have coming in here. Mick Jagger's tonsils. That's a perfect. We talked a little bit about the mango, and I know in the past we've hit on fertilizing and feeding. The question is, what is the best time to fertilize a mango tree? So maybe we can answer that both time of year and time of day. What do you think?
Okay, time of day is not that important. Time of year, I would actually spread it out throughout the year. Even in the fall, you can apply fertilizer to a tropical tree because this will help and allow the root system to grow. Many plants, even the tropical plants, have annual life cycles where they basically will fruit, flower in a particular season. In fact, even the citrus trees are semi-deciduous. So you can fertilize almost any time of year, especially on your tropical plants.
Okay, good advice there. And then we have our next question is regarding basil. And the question is basil an annual? And Robert, looking at our website, we have, it looks like, a number of different basils available. Can you answer that question and maybe give our listeners a little bit of information on the basil?
I can answer any question. Might not be correct, but I can certainly answer it. On the basils, we believe these to be biennial, although I have seen basils that have lasted year in, year out. It's an absolutely marvelous herb. It is definitely not an annual, meaning you're having to replant it once a year, or with some things like tomatoes, every 120 days. So the perennial herbs, many of which we carry here at Top Tropicals, are really a good value, especially when you go take a look in the grocery store and see what they charge for herbs and spices.
Absolutely. Grow your own. Always good advice. Speaking about annual or perennial, the question is regarding the clitoria that we talked about. Is that an annual or a perennial plant?
I'm pleased to say that the clitoria is indeed a perennial. It lasts year in and year out. Just be careful, don't get your clitoria too close to your Amorphophallus.
That sounds painful. So here's a good question. We had talked, I think, a couple weeks ago about a video on the vanilla orchid, and the question is, when will you be making more videos and what will they be about? I guess all this talk of plant names has got people thinking about videos. Robert, any words on the upcoming vanilla orchid video?
Well, we recently shot some material on it, and right now it's in the editing room where they're going to edit out many of the faux pas and a few other things. But yes, we will be producing more videos for sure, and on a variety of subjects. Be sure to look at some of the videos we already have. The best one was on jasmines, and I believe we have over 20,000 hits on that one so far. So we're doing pretty good on the videos.
Yes, lots of informative videos, both on our website and our YouTube channel. We talk about different varieties, different plants. We even have a donut tree video, I heard. I don't know what's going on with that one. Question regarding the Amorphophallus. What time of year is that plant dormant, and for how long?
Okay, the Amorphophallus, which is actually an aroid, it's related to elephant ears, taro root, and the like, will be dormant in the fall through early spring months. With the Amorphophallus, the most widely used one being Amorphophallus paeonifolius, meaning peony-like foliage. The flower comes up before the leaves. And basically, when the flower comes up, it lasts for about a day or two. Now, one thing about your Amorphophallus, the scent from the flower is like that of rotten carrion. So you'll have 500 flies doing a conga line around it. And many of the botanical gardens advertise when their particular Amorphophallus come into bloom, Amorphophallus titanum being the largest one. Fairchild Botanical Gardens, for instance, in Miami, Florida, the last time I remember seeing their Amorphophallus, they called it Alice the Amorphophallus, probably having to do with that song that Elton John had on Alice.
Interesting. Amorphophallus. Robert, we have a question here. You just mentioned flies, and I know summertime flies like to come out. The question is, how to get rid of flies in my garden? Do you have any good advice, suggestions to how to rid our gardens of those pests, the flies?
Okay, number one, destroy the habitat for the flies without destroying the habitat for the plants. Remove any fallen fruit that you see on the ground. You can also use pesticides. They also make fly traps as well. There are yellow sticky cards you can use to trap them with. So flies are unfortunately one of those major populations, and it's rather difficult. But through what we call basic sanitation, and that is the word used in the agricultural industry, through proper sanitation of the yard and garden, watching out for such things as fallen fruit, dead animals, etc., you can significantly reduce the fly population.
Fair enough. Good advice. Robert, we have a question regarding our shipping, and the question is, will you ever have discounts on shipping costs or offer free shipping? And just for all our listeners, the answer to that is obviously shipping is so dependent on where you live, the kind of plant, the size of the plant. So the short answer is no, we don't offer shipping discounts or free shipping. However, if you listen to our show or if you check regularly on the website, we always have some kind of special or promotion going on, which allows you to save greatly on your plant purchases. And also, when you put the plants in the cart on the website before you check out, you'll have an opportunity to see what the shipping cost will be. Might be a good time to add plants to your cart with our discounts and get a better value for your shipping dollar. So, and remember, all of the plants from Top Tropicals are cared for, nurtured, packed, and shipped directly from Top Tropicals. We don't drop ship from around the country. We don't hire other nurseries and garden centers to send you the plant. We nurture, care, pack, and ship every plant ourselves to ensure that you get top quality for your dollar. So my advice is to always check our website for whatever specials we have going on and use those discounts to help reduce your shipping costs.
Yes, indeed. Many companies do, in fact, offer free shipping, but that is mainly because you're getting screwed on the cost of the merchandise to begin with. So, you know, it's like caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. So we try and provide good value. The one thing that we do not do, we do not bump shipping. If FedEx or another USPS, some other carrier, charges us $9 for shipping, you're charged $9 for shipping. So just remember, here at Top Tropicals is where you get your best value. One other thing, if you don't want to pay shipping, come visit our nursery. What a better way. I mean, for all you housewives in North Dakota, in February, tell your husband that you're just going to go out and get a couple of plants, and 2 weeks later you come back with a wonderful tropical garden for your living room. Yeah.
All right. Time for one last question before we wrap it up. I think we're going to stick with the vanilla question since we talked a little bit about the upcoming video. So our questions are, how long does it take for vanilla cutting to root? And while we're talking about that, any special media for planting the vanilla in? Any ideas?
Yes, indeed. Any loose media, almost like a light succulent or cactus mix with plenty of perlite for drainage. What I like to do, and I've raised prize-winning vanilla orchids, is to actually take the vanilla vine, curl it up into a rope or garland, and then gently lay it on the soil surface. You don't need to stick the cut end in the soil, because many times that will make it rot. So basically a nice light mix with perlite and peat moss is my recommendation in a very well-drained container.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And with that, we're going to end today's episode. And I just want to remind our listeners, our next episode is scheduled for Saturday, August 12th. That's August 12th. We're going to take a couple weeks off here to provide more entertainment and value for all of our customers on the website and in our nursery. So our next episode, Saturday, August 12th, it is Gone with the Wind, when we will be talking about proper protection and pruning of trees and plants for the hurricane season. A reminder, you can go to our Mixlr site, mixlr.com/toptropicals, and listen to all of our archived episodes. Thanks again, and we will see you Saturday, August 12th, for our next episode.